The Short Stories of R.D. Blackmore. The short story is often viewed as an inferior relation to the novel, but it is an art in itself. To take a story and distill its essence into fewer pages while keeping character and plot rounded and driven is not an easy task. Many try and many fail. Blackmore was one to succeed, as this audiobook ably demonstrates. Richard Doddridge Blackmore was born on 7th of June 1825 at Longworth in Berkshire, now part of Oxfordshire, where his father John Blackmore was curate in charge of the parish. His mother died a few months after his birth, the victim of an outbreak of typhus. With this loss, the family moved to Bushey, Hertfordshire, then on to their native Devon. With much of his childhood spent in the lush and pastoral dune country of Exmoor, and along the Badgeworthy Water, Blackmore came to love the very countryside he immortalised in Lorna Doone. In November 1853, he married his wife Lucy, and the following year his literary career began, with a collection of poems, and for the next 15 years he would write in the winters and garden in the summers. In 1860, with inherited money, he built a house in Teddington, just outside of London, and established a market garden for the cultivation of fruit. He loved horticulture, but having little business experience, could never really exploit it. R.D. Blackmore died at Teddington on 20th of January 1900, after a long and painful illness, and was buried next to his wife in Teddington Cemetery.
Frieda, or The Lover's Leap, A Legend of the West Country, by R.D. Blackmore. Chapter 1. On the very day when Charles I was crowned with due rejoicings, Candlemas Day in the year of our Lord 1626, a loyalty quite as deep and perhaps even more lasting was having its beer at Ley Manor in the north of Devon. A loyalty not to the king, for the old West Country folk knew little and cared less about the house that came over the border, but to a lord who had won their hearts by dwelling among them and dealing kindly and paying his way every Saturday night. When this has been done for three generations, general and genial respect may almost be relied upon. The present Baron de Wichelholz was fourth in descent from that Hugh de Wichelholz, the head of an old and wealthy race, who had sacrificed his comfort to his resolve to have a will of his own in matters of religion. That Hugh de Wichelholz, having an eye to this as well as the other world, contrived to sell his large estates before they were confiscated, and to escape, with all the money, from very sharp measures then enforced by order of King Philip II in the unhappy Low Countries. Landing in England with all his effects and a score of trusty followers, he bought a fine property, settled, and died, and left a good name behind him. And that good name had been well kept up, and the property had increased and thriven, so that the present lord was loved and admired by all the neighbourhood. In one thing, however, he had been unlucky, at least in his own opinion. 10 years of married life had not found issue in parental life. All his beautiful rocks and hills, lovely streams and glorious woods, green meadows and golden cornlands, must pass to his nephew and not to his child, because he had not gained one. Being a good man, he did his best to see the thing in its proper light. Children, after all, are a plague, a risk, and a deep anxiety. His nephew was a very worthy boy, and his right should be respected. Nevertheless, the Baron often longed to supersede them. Of this there was every prospect now. The lady of the house had entrusted her case to a highly celebrated simple woman, who lived among rocks and scanty vegetation at Heddon's Mouth, gathering wisdom from the earth and from the sea tranquillity. De Wichelholz was naturally vexed a little when all this accumulated wisdom culminated in nothing grander than a somewhat undersized and unhappy female child. One, moreover, whose presence cost him that of his faithful and loving wife. So that the heiress of Ley Manor was greeted, after all, with a very brief and sorry welcome. Jennifried, for so they named her, soon began to grow into a fair esteem and good liking. Her father, after a year or two, plucked up his courage and played with her, and the more he played, the more pleased he was, both with her and his own kind self. Unhappily, there were at that time no shops in the neighbourhood. Unhappily, now there are too many. Nevertheless, upon the whole, she had all the toys that were good for her, and her teeth had a fair chance of fitting themselves for life's chief operation in the absence of sugared allurements. A brief and meagre account is this of the birth and growth and condition of a maiden whose beauty and goodness still linger in the winter tales of many a simple homestead. For sharing her father's genial nature, she went about among the people in her soft and playful way, knowing all their cares and gifted with a kindly wonder at them, which is very soothing. All the simple folk expected condescension from her, and she would have let them have it if she had possessed it. At last she was come to a time of life when maidens really must begin to consider their responsibilities, a time when it does matter how the dress sits and what it is made of, and whether the hair is well arranged for dancing in the sunshine and for fluttering in the moonlight. Also that the eyes convey not from that roguish nook the heart any betrayal of hide-and-seek. Neither must the risk of blushing tremble on perpetual brinks, neither must... But in a word, 'twas the 17th year of a maiden's life. More and more such matters gained on her motherless necessity. Strictly anxious as she was to do the right thing always, she felt more and more upon every occasion, unless it was something particular, that her cousin need not so impress his cousinly salutation. Albert de Witcherholz, who received that name before it became so inevitable, was that same worthy boy grown up, as to whom the Baron had felt compunctions highly honourable to either party touching his defeasance, or rather, perhaps, as to interception of his presumptive heirship by the said Albert, or at least by his mother contemplated. And Albert's father had entrusted him to his uncle's special care and love, having comfortably made up his mind, before he left this evil world, that his son should have a good slice of it. Now, therefore, the Baron's chief desire was to heal all breaches and make things pleasant, and to keep all the family property snug by marrying his fair Jennifried, or Frieda, as she was called at home, to her cousin Albert, now a fine young fellow of 25.